afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm pleased to have Dave Allen as my co-host today as we are bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday. It is October 15th. It is 2018. Good morning. Good afternoon. It's what a day. It's Monday.
Hello, and happy Manic Monday, Melody.
It is certainly manic, and it certainly is Monday. And there was a song, was it not?
It's just another Manic Monday.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Don't leave the program for a singing career, okay?
Oh no, I know my limits. But I must say I've been up for the shower Grammys in the past.
Oh yes, I think that's tough competition there, you know.
That's right, with 300 million other Americans.
Hey, gold today. You talk about competition with the paper markets, but at least we're up 750 right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, $1,226. Silver's up 7 cents today at 1476. Platinum up four at 846. And palladium took a big reversal today, up 1.60%, $17 at 1,090. I had a chance to take a look at the dollar. It was a little pressure, down 0.15. Still holding on to that 95 level, 95.09. Crude oil was up 27 cents at 71.61. And, you know, I think that'd be a real good call if you wanted to go long on oil. You know, we're going to be talking a little bit about Saudi Arabia, of course. And let's see, what else do I got here? Stock market prices. We have the Dow down 89 points, 25,250. The NASDAQ was down 66 points at 7,430. The S&P was down 16 at 2,750. And let's see, Saudis own about $166 billion in U.S. debt. Mm-hmm. We might have another oil embargo. We're going to be talking about that here in just a little bit. 10-year yield, 3.16%. Japan and Hong Kong were both down big. Japan almost 2%. Hong Kong down 1.33%. Europe and was basically unchanged overnight. The emotion, fear, and greed index moved up to 12. So we're holding at 12 there on that. Bitcoin was slightly higher by 3% today. And, you know, it's all kinds of crazy things that are going on. And particularly about, I didn't get the whole story. I know we're going to talk about it here in a little bit about the oil and sending Pompeo to Saudi Arabia, and I'm assuming that's all because of what is happening over there. But there was a report that I guess the Saudis, of course, you know who it's breaking. Don't know if it's true or not, but the Saudis are preparing to admit that Khashoggi was killed and the interrogation went wrong, in an interrogation that it went wrong. So that's what they're going to admit to. Of course, this was reported by CNN, so we're not really quite sure. But this was just released at 3:17 this afternoon, p.m., the time. And so there was two sources who spoke to CNN, how they're looking, how they're preparing a report. So I'm not quite sure if they come out and admit that it was just an interrogation that went wrong. If that eliminates all responsibility, it's no longer a murder but an accident. So I'm not sure if that's kind of washes everything away. So it's I don't know, Dave.
I don't see how it can be washed away. I mean, it's one thing if it's an interrogation gone wrong today, and you know, an hour, maybe two later. You know, you release a preliminary statement after you've talked with a couple of your major allies. But the fact that this happened now close to 2 weeks ago.
Has it been that long, 2 weeks?
Well, almost. I mean, yeah. It's certainly been 10 days.
10 days, yeah.
So, you know, in my own in my own conspiratorial mind, you know, they're my guess is if they're getting ready to make this statement, you know, they've already talked to a couple of major players around the world, and who knows where, you know, what it's going to lead to. But, you know, as we'll talk talk a little bit later in this segment, you know, they had threatened earlier, you know, prior to this announcement from CNN that, you know, any sanction-like action against them, you know, would result in, you know, major, you know, damage to the oil market. So we will see. So I get, you know, I guess, you know, not to be too tongue-in-cheek or insensitive, but, you know, if reports of, you know, dismemberment are true, I would say indeed that's an interrogation that went bad.
Yes, I understand, and certainly so. We'll have to see. I mean, because they had previously insisted that Khashoggi left the consulate soon after arriving. So, you know, certainly they always say sometimes that the cover-up is worse than, you know, you're in more hot water with the cover-up than if you just came out and stated it. But
someone must have played you know, the video or audio tapes that Turkey allegedly, said that they had.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we're going to talk about that here in a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. So it is just, and I don't know, I don't know why the Saudis interrogated him.
Oh, well,
I don't know.
I mean, ostensibly because he had been critical of the royal regime in some of his recent writings. Now, you know, he had been there to pick up, I believe, divorce papers that would permit you know, his marriage to his fiance, but
is that how they lured him there?
Yeah, they lure him there to say, "Hey, your papers, your divorce papers are ready," and you know, apparently he went in fairly unwitting that anything untoward was going to happen, much less, you know, that he would not only would he not, well, he came out. That's the thing. He came out. He just apparently came out in one or more bags.
I don't mean to laugh or because you said
I know.
No, I didn't really realize what, you know, what was the issue with them. I mean, certainly there's a lot of people critical of the family, and so, you know, you'd have to think there's something a little bit bigger, a little bit deeper than and he had no reason to fear for his life if he was going for his divorce papers. It's like, hey, FedEx them to me, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, you know, it's intriguing as to, as you said, he certainly had no idea he was going to, there was concerns or issues, or, you know, maybe his relationships with the family was a little bit deeper than, of course, what we all know. But I guess it's official. I guess Sears is officially filing for bankruptcy. And, you know, this really isn't a big surprise. It's just another sign of the times.
Yeah, confirmation of rumors.
Confirmation, yes. That they couldn't pay their debt. Didn't they have a payment due today?
Yes, they did. Pretty big one. I think $150 million or something to that effect.
Yeah, so they're looking to close about 142 unprofitable stores near the end of the year, in addition to the 46 stores it had already identified. And there are places on the internet where you can see where the stores are located. At the company currently has 687 Sears and Kmart locations, and one-third of the stores it operated in 2013. I always liked Kmart over Walmart any day. You know, I hate to see, but, you know, they certainly have gone downhill. And but the Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing comes 131 years after Mr. Richard Sears moved his business to Chicago, where the watch company would grow to become a retail empire that gave the city its tallest building, Dave.
Yeah, indeed. I was a big fan of Sears in the old day. I have an 18-year-old Sears riding mower that's still in operating condition. I haven't visited them nearly as often over the past 10 plus years.
It's all your fault.
I know. I take blame.
Okay.
It was once the country's biggest retailer.
Yep.
Yeah, the go-to destination for everything, including, Craftsman tools, Kenmore washing machines, Allstate insurance, and Discover credit cards. It survived the Great Depression, adapted as its shoppers traded catalogs for downtown department stores, and followed customers to the suburban shopping malls. But, it faltered. As the Amazons of the world, the specialty chains, the online merchants wooed consumers away from the stores. And Sears never seemed to find the niche that would bring them back. Despite efforts to cut costs by closing hundreds of stores in the past year, Sears has lost more than $11 billion since 2011. The last 2 years alone, the company's closed more than 725 Sears and Kmart stores. The company has 68,000 employees, 32,000 of whom are full-time. That's down from 178,000 in January of 2016, not that long ago. So,
Do they still own Allstate?
No, I don't believe so. I believe
they're not a part of Allstate anymore?
I'm pretty sure they're not. I'm pretty sure Allstate's an independent insurance agency company.
Okay. But this, and it really is sad to think that, when you have assets of almost $7 billion, it's, you're filing bankruptcy. I guess it is going to the filing was made in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York. And as you mentioned, they have total debts of $11 billion as of August 4th. So they couldn't turn it around. It failed. Sales continued to fall. And, of course, Sears began to shrink, and they shrank all the way into bankruptcy today. And I saw another interesting report I wanted to add here, Dave, and it's let me see if I can bring it up here. It was another, I believe it was Ford. Here we have Ford, and this is from Newsmax. They're looking to, let me see if I can bring it up here, cut 70,000 salary jobs in an $11 billion restructuring. And so that's not good either. Morgan Stanley has speculated that Ford may pare more than 20,000 jobs from his global workforce of 202,000, but the automaker wouldn't quantify how large it expected the salary reduction to be, or if it would involve involuntary separations. So Ford Motor Company has told its 70,000 salaried employees that they are going to face these unspecified job cuts as they trim back. So in July, the automaker cut its profit forecast for 2018 after second quarterly earnings fell by more than half. And so they made the restructuring announcement at that time, but they declined to give the details beyond the $11 billion cost. And he also canceled a September investor meeting in Dearborn, Michigan. And, of course, that's where the company is headquartered. So, again, we're seeing another company, Ford is just as Sears, was always there, just like Chevy and Sears and Buick, so these automobile companies are also having a difficult time. So I'm sure glad the economy is doing well.
Yeah.
Retail sales, barely rose in September as a rebound in motor vehicle purchases were offset by the biggest drop in spending at restaurants and bars in almost 2 years. This came from the Commerce Department, Dave. They said this morning that retail sales edged up 0.1% last month after a similar gain in August. And retail sales in September rose 4.7% from a year ago, excluding automobiles, gasoline, building materials, food services, retail. You know, that jumped 0.5% last month. The so-called core retail sales correspond most closely with the consumer spending component of the GDP.
I have to laugh at these numbers and how they're couched, you know, excluding this, excluding that. I mean, it's almost, you know, what's the
point? Yeah,
I know. Yeah. Hey, it's all of this is part of the economy. You know, it's like, you know, the Fed using the core PCE, excluding food and oil. I said, you know, I think, come on. I mean, let's start telling the truth.
But you know what, Dave, in today's world, people don't read past the headline. They don't read and they don't, there's no critical thinking anymore when people read these, you know, reports and so forth. And, you know, you're right. They just blatantly, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, yeah, even the best of the press, you know, is complicit in this, I think, faulty reporting with those very misleading headlines. You know, consumer spending is being driven by a robust labor market, you know, with the unemployment rate supposedly near a 49-year low of 3.7%. Tight labor market conditions are said to be gradually pushing up wage growth. The solid core retail sales in September pointed to strong consumer spending that should offset anticipated drags on economic growth from a widening trade deficit and persistent, even growing weakness in the housing market. Last month, auto sales surged 0.8% after declining 0.5% in August. You know, receipts at service stations also fell 0.8%, likely reflecting a moderation in gasoline prices.
And you know what? It's funny that they come out and they say it's impossible to determine the impact of Hurricane Florence on the data. Disruptions caused by the storm could have hurt sales at restaurants and bars last month. Well, wasn't Florence just a couple weeks ago? Not really even last month. Maybe it was last month, but I'm sure the numbers didn't filter through yet. But they don't include any storms when things turn around. You know, so that's just, you know, they use seasons when it's convenient and whether it helps their numbers or if the numbers aren't as good as what they think they should, you know, they'll juice them up by creating these various statements. You're right.
Yep.
It's We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. I need a break after that first segment. Thank you for joining us, and please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's a beautiful day here on the eastern shore of Maryland. We have 78 degrees. I'm going to give you a little weather news here. And had a little bit of fall weather, and we're ducking back into the fall weather tomorrow, of course, and it seems like we're going to be in the 50s and the 60s from now on, but a beautiful day, sunny after a little rain this morning, 78 degrees, so we had a, I think, is Indian summer, does that take you into November with warm temperatures, that, or did we have an Indian summer for October? Do you know?
No, early October we certainly had an Indian summer, but I think Indian summer, I mean, I've always known it to apply to, you know, anything prior to the official start of winter. You know, I don't know. That's how we grew up, but
okay.
Who knows?
1-800.
Don't quote me, please.
Not on Indian not on an Indian season. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, these programs are archived long-term. Just go to the little archives. And believe it or not, we are working on a readjustment on our website, so everything should be a little bit updated. And I truly am thinking, I think we said the same thing a year ago, but end of the year. Give us till the end of the year, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure our newly designed website will be active and go live. So anyway, and I'm stating that it's October 15th. If we can't get it done by then, there will be no more website.
Bye-bye.
Something else that we had the reports out from the Labor Department today. This was on Friday. That showed that the U.S. import prices jumped faster than expected in September. And I guess this is due to the resurgence of energy prices. But prices excluding fuels were unchanged. What? Okay. The Labor Department said on Friday import prices rose 0.5% last month, and that was the largest increase since May. And, of course, it followed a revised 4.4% decrease in August. And, of course, the so-called core import prices, again, which exclude food and fuel, rose 1% in the 12 months through August.
Yeah, the dollar has gained more than 6% this year against the currencies of, you know, the U.S.'s main trade partners, and dollar strength is expected to offset a little of an anticipated increase in prices as the U.S. presses ahead with tariffs on nearly all Chinese imports. I think that statement remains to be seen. I'm sort of skeptical about that. On Thursday, you know, President Trump warned there was much more he could do to hurt China's economy. The report also showed export prices were unchanged in September after declining 0.2% in August. Price for agricultural products fell 1.4% last month, largely attributable to some trade issues. Exports, on the other hand, rose 2.7% on a year-to-year basis last month after rising 3.5% in August.
Well, you know, last night in 60 Minutes, President Trump was interviewed by Leslie Stahl, and I guess he was asked about the China, and he says he's, you know, he could very well, again, confirming that there could be more tariffs and so forth. So far, the U.S. has imposed three rounds of tariffs on Chinese imports that totaled $250 billion. And, of course, it's going to be interesting to see how this is all going to play out. But we certainly seen China's, I saw where they lost, what, $3 trillion on their stock market in this past, you know, since their highs. They're hovering around a little bit higher than 2,500. So it's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money to lose, and it's all, you know, it will, you know, perhaps make them, you know, be a little more negotiable when it comes to the trade talks with the United States. We talked a little bit about this on Friday, where the consumer sentiment in early October fell just short of expectations on Friday, but found American confidence in U.S. economic policy was actually at a 15-year high. This is from the University of Michigan's monthly survey of consumers, hit 99 in its preliminary reading for October, below the 100.4 expected from economists that were polled by Reuters. And so within the survey, a key data point revealed growing bipartisan support for the government's economics policies.
Yeah, interestingly, most of the October gain was due to an upward adjustment by Democrats, although their evaluations were still below the much more favorable evaluations of Republicans. The overall index has slumped since March, when it reached its highest level since 2004, with a reading of 101.4. Melody.
Well, you know what, we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk a little bit. We talked a lot about this at the beginning of the program, where President Trump said that he is sending Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, to meet with Saudi King Salman, with this mounting international backlash over the columnist Khashoggi. What is it, Khashoggi?
Yeah, that's Khashoggi. That's acceptable.
Well, thank you. The kingdom again came under this intense scrutiny over the disappearance of this man. Trump said he had spoken around 20 minutes with the Saudi king, who firmly denied any involvement in the disappearance. Trump said, "I don't want to get into his mind, but it sounded to me like maybe these could have been rogue killers."
Yeah, I mean, he said, the press said that Pompeo would be departing Washington, you know, within an hour or so. That was this morning. With license to travel wherever necessary, including Turkey, to investigate and unveil, I guess, get to the bottom of just what happened. You know, Trump also said that with Turkey's release of jailed pastor Andrew Brunson, which we talked about on Thursday last week, you know, relations there, Turkey, that is, were vastly improved. Turkey had publicly scolded the Saudi government for refusing repeated requests for them to search the consulate. You know, the agreement to search came a day after the king called Turkish President Erdogan, thanking him for welcoming the kingdom's proposal to set up a joint working group to probe Khashoggi's disappearance.
Well, it reminds me of that breakfast cereal.
What's that?
His name.
Khashoggi.
Yeah. Kashi, isn't that a breakfast cereal? Anyway.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Anyway.
I don't run in those healthy circles anymore.
But, you know, it's going to be interesting because, you know, President Trump said that, you know, there could be severe punishment if it was found to have killed, if it was found that the Saudi king had killed Khashoggi. And, you know, there's talk of the weapon sales to the king, to the Saudis. But then you read other things and it shows that, well, we really don't sell that much to them. It's kind of an old agreement. It's going over a long period of time and it really wouldn't have that much of an impact. So if we need those few billion dollars that desperately, that's the way I was looking at it. If we need those sales of arms to the Saudis so desperately, you know, it just goes to show you just how poor our economy and our structure really is. Yeah. You see where I'm going with that?
Oh, picture? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, because if it's a long term, meaning today, it would only be, you know, how many billions of dollars?
Well, it's $110 billion. Now, I don't know how much of that has already been
exactly sold.
You know, has changed hands.
Exactly.
You know, overall, it's certainly not peanuts.
It's not peanuts, but I think we don't know enough about. We just know the number. We don't know anything more than that. So I'm going to have to follow up on that and see if I can get a little bit more details on exactly what the agreement is, how long it's spread out, and how many years, and so forth, and how much has already changed hands, as you mentioned. Also, the oil market, it's, of course, on edge after this. The Saudis issued a combative statement that some are interpreting as a veiled threat to use crude as a weapon in the ongoing scandal. And the question is whether Saudi Arabia would take this extraordinary step. And if we remember, it has not taken a step like this since the Arab oil embargo of 73 and 74. So what exactly did Saudi Arabia say to worry the market? The Saudi press agency issued a statement saying Riyadh rejects all threats of economic sanctions, political pressure, and false accusations, adding that it will respond to any action with greater action. So what caught the eye of many oil market watchers was a reminder in the statement that the kingdom's economy does have an influential and vital role in the global economy, and certainly our dollar. That's how I'm reading it. You know, what are they going to do to our dollar? So
it's, I think, something very good to be focusing on, Melody. You know, why else does it matter? Well, Saudi Arabia produces about 10.5 million barrels of oil a day. You know, it's equal to more than 10% of global crude demand. It's the largest world exporter of oil, exporting 7 million barrels a day, depending on the month. You know, given those figures, I mean, the kingdom is certainly, you know, a central figure, you know, in the global oil market at any time. But its influence is especially pronounced right now. And that's because, you know, the U.S. is aiming to wipe out oil exports from Iran starting November 4th. You know, Iran is OPEC's third biggest partner and a longtime enemy of both Saudi Arabia and the United States. Trump restored sanctions on Iran in May, as listeners recall, and gave all oil buyers until November 4th to stop importing Iranian crude. Saudi Arabia is one of the few OPEC nations with enough spare capacity to offset the loss of Iranian barrels. And the U.S. is relying on the kingdom to increase output and blunt the upward pressure on oil prices caused by the Iranian policy. In my mind, that leaves the Saudis with some major leverage here in the days and weeks to come.
Well, I think the biggest impact, I mean, is the U.S. dollar. I mean, they have, as I mentioned, $388 billion? That's really not a lot compared to everybody else. I mean, it's significant, but what could they do to our petrodollar? How could they, I mean...
Well, you know,
Who's really got the control here?
Yeah, who's the dog and who's wagging it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good point. I mean, in that case, I think it could be every bit as much of a perception in terms of creating new expectations in the global, marketplace. You know, we know that, you know, other players, major players, China in particular, Russia, and others are looking, you know, for a new payment system for oil. So, you know, the Saudis wanted to play big games with the U.S. and the dollar. Boy, there you go.
Well, I think, the only other thing that I would bring in there is Yemen. You know, they need our money. We just paid them a bunch of money. So then we continue to sell them arms so they can continue to fight in Yemen. And really, I've also been reading that, you know, Saudis have a lot of their own. They could protect themselves if they wanted to. They don't need us anymore. So I don't know. It's there's so many conflicting little stories, and it's you know, so intriguing how it is weaved, and you could have all these different types of scenarios. You really don't know, and markets aren't responding. You really don't see markets really responding to these types of threats and so forth. So it's almost like no one believes. I mean, everybody believes that, you know, the main focus is to keep the system going as long as it can. So no one's going to do anything, you know, to make them collapse sooner than later.
Right.
So I don't know. But anyway, you know, you recently wrote an article in this. We're not going to talk too much about it, so you have to make sure you get to the website and sign up for a weekly newsletter. And you note that last week in the markets is a stark reminder of just how the paper markets, not only just here in the United States, but also all around the world, could just turn on a dime.
Yeah, you know, that our economies are all interconnected, and that's underscored by how global stock markets seem to move in tandem after a sell-off of U.S. Treasuries further edged up interest rates, you know, beyond investor expectations last week. You know, China's Shanghai Index down nearly 10%, Japan's Nikkei 5.7%, Hong Kong 4.9%, and the FTSE in London down 3.4%. The U.S. The Dow slipped 4.2, the S&P 500 4.1, and NASDAQ down 3.7. You know, in all, the share price of more than 250 companies in the broader S&P hit correction territory, meaning, you know, they were down at least 10% from their 52-week highs. What's more, the S&P fell below its bellwether 200-day moving average for the first time since April, a signal that the bears are closing in. And as we mentioned, the volatility index, the VIX, Wall Street's favorite fear gauge, hit its highest level since early in the year. You know, started at 16.73 a week ago, hit a high of 28.84 on Thursday, its highest since February. And as the markets opened this morning, you know, the VIX was about 28% higher, at a little over 21. Translation, ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your hats. The roller coaster brakes have been turned off. It's looking like a wild and wacky fourth quarter. Read the rest of the article. It'll be in today's American Survival newsletter. It'll be published later on this afternoon. A lot of good information in there. And you have any questions or comments to make, don't hesitate to leave them on our Facebook page, or email me at daveallen.usa@yahoo.com.
And we're heading into a break right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back right after these few short messages.
On the line, I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I just want to update you all on Pastor Butch Paul. We're going to miss him again this week. He won't be here Tuesday or Thursday, where I have an interview with James Corbett. So we will hear James Corbett on Thursday, and Beth from CSC Talk Radio is going to be joining me a couple times this week. I don't know how you got off so easy. I guess you have to be here triple next week, Dave.
There you go.
Whatever
the listeners need.
And so, you know, we'll be updating you on the condition of Pastor Paul, Butch Paul, and also when he'll be returning next week. So he still needs your prayers, and they're going to be still working. He still is having issues on his foot, on his toe, and so again, prayers, and we'll keep you posted, and fingers crossed he'll be back next week. So I'm sure he'll have a lot to talk about when he returns. And, you know, heading into the break, we were talking about the recession and how it's going to be different this time around. And how can and how will the recession be different this time, Dave?
Well, you know, as the late, great Elizabeth Barrett Browning would reply poetically to that question, Melody, let us count the ways. And there are several. Let's look at just a couple of them. I mean, primarily, the one thing to remember is that 10 years ago, there was a lot more intergovernmental, intercentral bank cooperation that essentially staved off a complete collapse of the, you know, of the world's economy. You know, a lot has changed since then. I mean, even just one short year ago, the world was pretty much in economic harmony. I mean, growth was rising in just about every big advanced economy except the UK. You know, the same goes for, you know, most of the emerging markets as well. The 2018 picture is in glaring contrast. You know, investors around the world are worrying about slowing growth and the effects of tighter American monetary policy. You know, those fears are understandable and justifiable. You know, here in the States, you know, last year's tax cuts have helped lift GDP at least temporarily above 4% and unemployment at its lowest in 49 years, especially if you exclude the disaffected, the discouraged and discounted job seekers. You know, yet the IMF thinks growth is going to be slower this year and slightly more so next. Some of the emerging markets are in downright trouble. You know, and this uncoupling between the U.S. and the rest of the world means divergent monetary policies, too. You know, the Fed has raised interest rates 8 times since December of 2015, and it's still poised, again, at least in terms of what, you know, the futures market is, or, you know, is saying, you know, to have another increase come December. You know, and you know, many, ourselves included, think that's, you know, a cut off your nose to spite your face policy. Now, conversely, the European Central Bank continues to hold off on its first increase. You know, in Japan, rates are negative. China loosened its monetary policy this week in response to a weakening economy. You know, as we know, when interest rates rise here but nowhere else, the dollar, you know, tends to strengthen. And that makes it harder for emerging markets to repay their dollar-based debts. And I think that's what's going to eventually lead to you know, a boomerang effect that, coupled with, you know, rising rates and some of the other economic issues, particularly the out-of-sight debt, you know, Argentina's and Turkey's currency issues, Pakistan last week, you know, their prime minister asked the IMF for a bailout of up to $10 billion to cover their expected bill for imports and foreign debt. So, you know, the stage is set that when the next recession hits, I mean, certainly the U.S. is in a not nearly as good of a position as, you know, we were 10 years ago, with interest rates, you know, roughly half of what they were then. I mean, the two biggest ways that, you know, recession, that governments look, you know, to deal with recessions is monetary policy and fiscal policy. And we're both of aspects of that in the U.S. are just untenable. I mean, debt, gross national debt anyway, over 100% of GDP. And, you know, it's ironic that the Fed's, you know, loosening, you know, and increasing rates is probably going to lead us into the next recession. And then the Fed isn't going to have nearly enough of room to do what it usually does, and, you know, that being cutting rates to as low as zero. So I think that, Melody, that there is just a lot to be concerned about in this respect. You know, going forward, you know, desperate times call for decisive, preemptive action from our decision makers, and that's absent. It's just hard to see, hard to find these days, with few exceptions. And last week's surge in market volatility especially suggests that time could be short. The world should start preparing now for the next recession while it can. And listeners, right, Melody? They should too.
Absolutely. It's going to be different this time around, ladies and gentlemen, because they've synchronized so much of the numbers just to keep the systems going. Because, you know what? The world's economic system should have collapsed 10 years ago. But they kept it going. And the trillions of dollars were created. That's been synchronized. You have these central banks that have done everything to get these economies going with fingers crossed thinking, or they at least try to convince people that greater economies, they'd be able to grow themselves out of their problem. Well, we can't grow ourselves out of our problem. The problem, maybe if they would have recognized what was happening pre-2008, maybe at that point in time we could have grown ourselves out. But at this point in time, no way can we grow ourselves out of our problems. And if we can't do it, how can the rest of the world do it? Your emerging markets, as Dave has said, the dollar rally has pushed these emerging market currencies over a cliff. You know, I was reading where, you know, there's far more, you know, you have the central banks that are trying to reduce their monthly QE liquidity injections earlier in the year. It's not working. The Fed has increased rates three times this year. You have rate hikes, 60% in Argentina, 24% in Turkey. I had to chuckle. Because I was reading somebody, it's Doug Nolan's, and he's saying this is the time. He says it's over. He says this is it. And he says, I told my wife that it's over. And he hears her laugh. And she says, how many times have you said that? He'll chuckle. He says, this time I mean it. And they'll share a little laugh. He says, but this time he wasn't kidding. He says he does believe that this is over. It's over. And he thinks it's over because all these market bailouts ensured things turned really crazy. And he believes this time around it's going to take central bankers longer to respond, just like what Dave said. And the market structure has become acutely vulnerable. You have trillions in perceived safe and liquid ETFs, trillions in hedge fund industries, trillions here, trillions there. And people are going to lose so much. They're not going to even know what hit them, Dave.
Yeah.
And they're being brainwashed into thinking that it's going to come back. Keep your money there. Don't panic. We don't want you to panic. Keep your money there. And even if the market drops 50, 60, 70%, it came back the last time, didn't it? This time is a lot different, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't believe it's going to come back. And I think it'll find a bottom. And I think it's going to hover around there for quite a while. Because there's going to be so many people wiped out. People who had plans on, you know, their savings, their retirement accounts. Now all of a sudden they were planning on $5,000 a month. Now all of a sudden it's $1,500. There's going to be a lot of adjustments in lifestyle. And who believes it? I don't think people believe that it's going to happen because it's been said. This is the time. It's over. And how many times have you heard that? And they have incredible power. The debt, they can create these programs, these debt programs, and they've been able to extend it and extend it. And who benefits? Not you and me, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't mean to be rattling on and breaking, stop me, Dave. Stop me, Dave. But maybe we can go to, there's $1 billion in lotteries. There you go. Are you gambling people? If you have your money in the paper market, you must be gamblers. So here's a gamble for you. $1 billion. We know that almost no gold and silver investors are gamblers. We know it's just the opposite. We're conservative people. We prefer safe haven assets against that paper dollar. And but between the nation's two largest lotteries, there's nearly $1 billion in jackpot money that's up for grabs. And the odds of hitting all winning numbers in either game, pretty bad, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
For the $654 million Mega Million Dollar jackpot, which marks the game's second largest top prize ever, your chance of winning is 1 in 302.6 million. For the Powerball's $345 million top prize, it's 1 in 292 million. So this is what's interesting. The chance of winning both is at least 1 in 88 quadrillion.
I love that that number.
That's how many derivatives we have, right? Oh,
quadrillion.
And that's 88 followed by 15 zeros.
15 zeros,
15
geez.
Zeros, Dave.
I've just gotten used to,
trillion.
Recognizing trillion, yeah. In comparison, ladies and gentlemen, your chance of being struck by lightning in your lifetime is 1 in 14,600, according to the National Weather Service. Not that we're looking to have one or the other happen to us. Although, if I had my druthers, I'd pick one of these jackpots. Now, the next drawings are tomorrow night for Mega Millions and Wednesday for Powerball. But remember this, if you make an exception and happen to pay $5 or $10 for a couple of tickets, the Mega Millions $654 million prize could buy you about 531,700 ounces of gold. or over 44 million ounces of silver. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You might have to build an addition to your house, you know, mind you. And winning, you know, the $345 million Powerball jackpot instead, well, that'd bring you a measly 280,000 ounces of gold and just a little over 23 million ounces of silver. You know, ladies and gentlemen, when in doubt, I say go for it just this once.
And who are you going to call to purchase all that gold and silver? There's only one place for you to call, and that's Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And that's going to be 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I knew a gentleman who one of his neighbors won a lottery. He's no longer with us. He lived in Michigan, and the people moved in next door to him, and I think it was two stories down, but it was a big old mansion and so forth. And he told me, he says, you know, it was just a matter of time, a couple years, they ended up in a divorce, and everything else went into drugs, and she had to leave the house bankrupt. It was like a $20 million lottery. And,
oh my gosh, isn't that something?
It's terrible, but there, you hear those stories all the time. People just can't handle the wealth. And so at least convert it into some real money, gold and silver. And even if you don't have $654 million or $345 million, get what you do have and protect it with gold and silver. It's going to be so important in the very near future, because I do believe this is the time. It doesn't mean it's going to happen by the end of next week, but I think the backdrop has cracked, and it's a big crack, and it's no more sealing it up. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Dave, we'll be back. We'll be back on Wednesday with Wendy. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, good night, and God bless.
I work all night. Bye-bye.
I pay to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.